This is CliffCentral.com.
CliffCentral.com, Thursday morning, and the Burning Platform, which, as you know, is brought to you by Nando's every single week. Nando's not afraid of controversy, not afraid to be the people who bring you the most interesting discussions. And on current affairs matters, they are always quick to respond with something that is bound to make people laugh. Certainly, that's my experience at Nando's. Every time you think something really, really funny is going on, it doesn't take you long to turn on your TV or to go on the internet and you see an ad they've made or a meme or a picture or a post of some kind and you're like, wow, this is spectacular.
Comedic timing.
Absolutely. And who knew? You know how people get upset that corporations are considered people in some ways. I think if Nando's were a corporation, it'd be a damn funny comedian who also happened to make really good chicken, right?
Spicy.
Yeah, very spicy.
Spicy chicken.
All right, so let's get into things this morning. Canthan is here, Pumi is here, and of course you are here. You're allowed to add in wherever you would like, and you can criticize, complain, comment, or deliberate with us on 0797482090. There is a lot going on. Can we start in Britain, please? Not that I'm particularly fussy about this, but if you haven't been watching the news, Boris has prorogued Parliament. What does this mean? He's going to call for a Queen's speech on the 17th of October, I think, where he's going to be asking the Queen to basically come up with a new agenda for Parliament.
Oh, Boris has...
And he's doing this because he wants to prevent Parliament from getting in the way of a no-deal Brexit.
Well, that's speculation, surely. Everyone says that's the reason why he's doing it.
So what do you think the reason is?
Well, it's obviously the reason why he's doing it. But let's understand the way in which the rules of this thing work. Historically, what happens is every time there's a new prime minister, the prime minister then prorogues Parliament and calls upon the monarch to deliver the Queen's speech in this particular case.
Right.
Because it's outlining what the priorities are going to be for the government, for his particular government or her particular government in the case. So the last time that there was a Queen's speech was in 2017.
Hmm.
So it is actually overdue for
Well overdue.
Yes. And right. And historically what happens is at the point at which one calls for the Queen's speech, it's then followed, because essentially the Queen's speech is delivered by the Queen. But
well, she is the head of state. And remember, England is not a constitutional country. It's actually a monarchy. It's a feudal country.
Yes, it is a constitutional monarchy because it's kind of, it goes back to the Magna Carta, doesn't
sure,
it?
Sure, of course.
At the point at which people just basically said, if you want to keep your head, let's have a discussion.
To King John.
Yes.
All right, so let's look at this. Here's Boris talking about it in his own words, and then you can you can comment afterwards and give us your own interpretation of what Boris means.
As I said on the steps of Downing Street, we're not going to wait until October the 31st before getting on with our plans to take this country forward.
Right.
And to do that, we need new legislation.
Yes.
We've got to be bringing forward new and important bills.
Right.
And that's why we are going to have a Queen's speech, mm-hmm. and we're going to do it on October the 14th. And we've got to move ahead now with a new legislative programme.
Right. Prime Minister, to do that Queen's speech, you will need to prorogue Parliament for several days. Your critics will say this is an insult to democracy and denying the MPs the time they need to debate and possibly vote on Brexit.
No, well, that is completely untrue. If you look at what we're doing, we're bringing forward a new legislative programme on crime, on hospitals, making sure that we have the education funding that we need. And there will be ample time on both sides of that crucial October the 17th summit. Ample time in Parliament for MPs to debate the EU, to debate Brexit, and all the other issues. Ample time.
Honestly, you seem to have an ambitious domestic agenda, but your government does not have a majority. Even with the DUP, it only barely has a majority. Should we take from this that you are planning a general election before the end of this year?
No, all you should take from this is we're doing exactly what I said on the steps of Downing Street, which is that we must get on now with our legislative domestic agenda.
We may not even know by the 14th of October whether you're going to get a deal, and the outlook could be quite different whether you do or whether you don't. So what have you got to say to the public who may be concerned about the economic
We need to get on with our domestic agenda, and that's why we're announcing a Queen's speech for October the 14th.
All right. Well, there it is. That's what Boris says. Interesting. Justice Malala retweeted something. Justice Malala, who used to be on the Burning Platform with us, he's in America now. He retweeted something from Stephen Fry, of all people, who clearly is in a bit of a panic. Stephen Fry, who's returned to Twitter, said the following, and maybe this is some of the hysteria that we're seeing on what's going on. Weep for Britain, he says. A sick, cynical, brutal, and horribly dangerous coup d'etat. I mean, if this ever did happen, we'd run out of superlatives. But nonetheless, children playing with matches, but spitefully, not accidentally, gleefully torching an ancient democracy and any tattered shreds of reputation or standing our poor country had left. Is Stephen okay?
No, he's not okay. And the fact of the matter is that if the UK was a true democracy, then the Brexit Party would have several seats in Parliament, and they don't. Because it just so happens that the way in which your constituencies have been delimited means that it always favors particular groups. This goes on in the US all the time, where voting districts are basically drawn up to favor the parties that are already in power. Mm. So it's
gerrymandering.
Yes. Well, yes. But it's legal, so.
But and you know, for me, the most exciting thing about what we're watching happen right now with Boris, is this is the reason why you have to participate. People did not think Brexit was going to happen. People did not show up to the polls. Not enough, you know. So, and this is the thing: the problem with democracy.
But just hold on, because you are assuming that the people who didn't pitch up would have voted to stay. Some of them would also probably have voted to leave. The fact is, we can only go on what we know for sure, and what we know for sure is that a slight majority, but a majority nonetheless, of people said, let's get the hell out of here.
Mm.
And it's taken the British elite and Parliament, who've been sitting on their hands, years now, not just months, years, to enact the will of the people. I think that all these virtue signalers who are saying democracy is this and democracy is that have forgotten that democracy is basically a majority of people deciding to go in a certain direction. And Parliament, not anybody else, but Parliament has been thwarting that democracy. Am I wrong?
It started with Theresa May, because Theresa May was always opposed to Brexit.
Yeah.
And she essentially spent the years that she was in office doing her damnedest to ensure that even though she was purportedly implementing Brexit, what she was in fact doing was trying to carve out a deal that meant that, in effect, even though they were not part of the EU, they were still part of the EU. And that's, in essence, what the backstop is all about. It's a backdoor to retain membership in the EU. And everyone was obviously quite pissed off about this.
And even though Boris says there'll be plenty of time, really.
Not really.
The 31st, from the 17th to the 31st, yeah. And knowing how parliaments work and the kind of, you know, the way those deliberations are, is not enough.
But let's
time.
Go back to the Queen's speech just again for a couple of minutes. Because normally what happens immediately after the Queen's speech, there's the parliamentary debate that takes place. And that is the opportunity for one to table a vote of no confidence.
Mm.
And I would reasonably expect at that point that someone would actually table a vote of no confidence. So it probably would be Jeremy Corbyn who would say, you know, we have no go. And at that point, they will call for a vote. And on the assumption that Boris Johnson ends up losing the vote of no confidence, in other words, if he's not able to actually get 50% plus one seat, which is what he's currently got,
mm-hmm.
he has it's a single seat that keeps him in power.
Very close.
Yes. But if that happens, then he calls for fresh elections. But he can call for fresh elections within a specific period,
yeah.
which doesn't have to happen before the Brexit deadline.
Mm.
Halloween, remember?
Mm. 31st of October. I mean, the margin is close. So and also thinking about how Boris became the prime minister is also because his party voted for him. This is how.
Mm. Which is exactly how Theresa May became leader.
And
the reason why Cyril Ramaphosa is president of South Africa is because his party voted for him. Let's be very clear about
that. This is brinkmanship at its most extreme levels then.
Well,
because these margins are thin and these chances of success are slight on both sides.
I think if you look at the numbers that Boris has been polling for the past while, I strongly suspect that if there was a general election called immediately, that Boris would actually pull off a majority government.
Well, we certainly know Corbyn couldn't fashion a government.
Absolutely not. But you must certainly take.
But then, why is someone like Stephen Fry, who I think is quite a sensible chap, and who's usually, I mean, I find myself agreeing with him almost all the time. He's immensely acerbic and witty and talented and able to figure a way that seems to me quite rational through most things. He seems very upset about this. What is going on here? Why am I not able to agree with my friend Stephen Fry?
I think Stephen Fry has the particular problem of being insulated by wealth. And I think a lot of us have this problem. I mean, right now we have a situation in our country where I tell people our capital is burning and people turn around and say, don't be alarmist. Well, you know, when last did you go to the Johannesburg CBD? Everyone kind of assembled around here.
Yeah, I haven't been in for a while.
Yes, so you know, use the same argument in terms of Pretoria. The place is burning, but because of the fact that we sit in relatively comfortable suburbs, where we are basically insulated primarily by geography in terms of people being able to actually take the struggle to our doorsteps. But you know, let's be very clear about this: there are people on the streets there who have very real grievances because of failure of government to deliver. And the fact that it manifests itself with xenophobia should not actually distract us from the reason that they are there on the streets in the first place. There is this overwhelming sense of frustration that their lives have, over the past 25 years, actually degraded. And they are trying their damnedest to express their frustration in a way that can actually show them some results. And if that means stealing a TV, then that's stealing a TV. Mm. Pumi is looking at me.
No, I'm looking at you like that because before the show started, when Gareth and I were waiting outside for... Who was late this morning? I see ya.
That's so shady.
We were talking about exactly that. The fact that what we see as xenophobia is actually an economic frustration that's manifesting itself as xenophobia. Because if you have little power, you exert the little power you have on people who have even less power than you.
Correct.
And that's the thing about what's happening in Pretoria, the burning mother city. I thought you were going to play us the song. The city was on fire yesterday. Yeah. And I saw Canton was tweeting about it, and I saw some of the people that were responding to it. But I was also just wondering.
We get upset about the Amazon on fire, which turns out to be like 30 years ago's pictures, but we can't get upset about our own capital burning.
Jeez. And the outrage. I mean, there was the manufactured outrage. There was some 4 weeks ago when it was the police versus the supposed foreigners in Joburg CBD, and the outrage of the way people are treating our police. And yesterday when it's in Pretoria, none of that outrage. It was like, wow, we're not even recycling it 3 weeks later. Mm. It's too much happening in this season of South Africa.
I wonder, there's something interesting someone told me the other day about how, because of modern media, and I'd love to hear your comments on this, because of modern media, there isn't ever an end to the re-election campaign of whoever is in power. As a result, they can't really get those important details done because they're so busy trying to be re-elected either within their own party or within the general populace that the leaders, who we suppose are the people who are meant to push through new legislature, new ideas, come up with means of administering the country a little bit better. And this is probably not as relevant here as it might be in, you know, Europe or in Russia or well, there isn't an election in Russia ever, or in the US, for example, because everyone's constantly campaigning. Do you think that's changed because of the news cycle? That's changed something about politics too? It used to be that someone had 4 years, 5 years, to get in and to make things happen.
I think the campaigning actually does continue, and I think that's going to be an ongoing thing. But at the same time, I think that the majority of voters actually don't care. And they tend to pretty much ignore the ongoing campaigning on social media. And on rare occasions, when they feel strongly enough about something, then they will actually pitch up and make their opinions felt. And Brexit is a classic example of that. The turnout for Brexit and the number of people that voted in favor of Brexit was the largest turnout that the British voters have actually had in history. Let's be very clear about this, that they turned out in their numbers because they had a very simple thing to vote for, and they actually did so. Mm. And then when Theresa May called an election, they couldn't be bothered to go back to the polls because they weren't interested in voting for this particular politician. But were they interested in voting for Brexit? Yes. I think that increasingly what's going to happen as we get further and further down this rabbit hole that the internet has taken us on, that we are going to see increasingly that government will be run on the basis of direct democracy, where you end up having very specific votes on very specific issues that will then get dealt with and get put aside.
Do we think hasten the day and we love this, or do we think this is a terrible thing?
Well, it's certainly better than what we have right now, which is complete and utter inaction.
Well, that's also largely as a result of government being disintermediated. I mean, a lot of people are asking themselves, and you jokingly said that government's a vampire and we need to put a stake through their heart so we're all stakeholders. But people have completely lost faith in the idea of an administrative government. I think that people's lives, especially in South Africa, we know from the Stats SA reports that already, 90% of our municipalities, or more than 90% of our municipalities, are anarchy. There is nothing going on in those municipalities that would indicate to anyone who lives in them that there is any semblance of a government. So we're already living in a country which is largely ungoverned.
Yes.
So what happens in Parliament, or when the president delivers a speech, or when a minister tries to do something, is almost inconsequential to people, where before it had real-world implications that were tangible and that affected people's lives. Now, the inaction of government seems to do more to affect people's lives than the action of it ever could.
Yes, and that's the point at which we actually say that inaction is a good thing. You know, stuff gets tied up in legislative processes in the U.S. all the time.
Mm.
So every time Trump tries to do something, then he gets taken to court. And, you know, he'll generally get taken to court at a state level, and that state will generally rule against him. Then it'll go to the appellate division, which will rule in favor of him. Then another state will come up with something contrary, and eventually it'll make its way up to the Supreme Court. But guess what? In the meanwhile, the country just continues to work, and things actually happen, and economic growth takes place, and, you know, people go about their jobs and they barbecue on the weekends. And that really is an ideal situation, because as soon as we get government out of our lives, the truth is that we come up with very creative ways in which we're actually addressing all of those things which used to be addressed by Helen Zille's capable state. The capable state is never coming back.
Give up on it.
Yes, it's never coming back. Well, the only capable state that we have right now is China. And do we really want to be living in China?
Well, no, it's a tyranny.
Absolutely.
And an autocracy.
Yes.
But
they're capable. I mean, they provide all of the bases. They take care of food security.
They'll also haul you out of Hong Kong and put you in a Beijing gulag. And don't forget, let's just, while you mention China, I think it's fair of us to mention something we don't often mention that requires our attention. The Uyghurs, as they're called, the people who live in the western parts of China who are Muslim, are largely living in gulags right now. 1 million of them have been imprisoned, and we hear nothing about this because China doesn't have a free media.
Oh, we hear about it. Of course we hear. We just don't talk about it.
Well, no.
I mean,
clearly. It's not coming through Chinese press, is what I'm saying.
Yes.
And the Chinese government will do everything they can to thwart anybody's attempt to make this this opinion known, this fact known. These people are suffering enormously at the hands of the Chinese government, and 1 million people locked up in places is not what we should consider a capable state in the first place.
Well, but the news is there if you go looking for it. I mean, if you consider, I was watching and listening yesterday. I tuned into every single one of the radio stations.
Yes.
Yesterday, everyone's leading with Zandile Gumede is not willing to step down as mayor. For fuck's sake, guys, our capital is on fire, and you're talking about the mayor of Durban not wanting to step down. What's going on?
So who's setting these agendas? And
incompetence sets the agenda in terms of the media in this country.
But there's so much incompetence to go around. Why would it make the headlines? I mean, really, there's so much. Why is it still news?
When the Capitol is burning, the first thing that happens is that flashes across TV screens around the world, which is what is happening. And the ratings agencies are watching that.
Yeah.
And ultimately, that affects us at a far more fundamental level than the mayor of my mother's city actually not wanting to step down. I mean, she's not wanting to step down because she wants a more hefty payout. She's taken legal advice. That makes sense. If yes. I was in
That's
her
why
position,
she resigned and rescinded her resignation.
Yeah, she's taken legal advice. Look, if I was in her position, I would do exactly the same thing. But can we be very clear? Our capital is on fire.
I have a
and,
huge
and we're worried
smile.
About what color the drapes are.
I have a huge smile because this is always the thing that every single week, you see, all of us have to take our own lives, right?
Mm-hmm.
We have to be responsible for our own lives. We yep. have to be. So in the event that the state has completely collapsed, mm-hmm. right? Who then becomes responsible? We are no longer able to point at this man called government to say, this is right. the problem in my life. Is we have to do something about it. We have to organize. We have to be in charge and in control.
You have, give you credit. You've been consistent about that from the get-go. You have. You've
and
said that
also,
we have to do it and we have to get involved. You didn't just mean participate in democracy. You mean take responsibility for your own life.
But also it's about, you know, so don't allow yourself to be fed all of this stuff. You know about the gulags and the Muslim people in China because you're not just consuming everything that is coming your way. You are asking critical questions and you're going, what happens to and this is unfortunately the problem we have in South Africa. Everybody complains about our media and that our media is biased. And depending on who you ask, you know, there's a Stratcom somewhere over there. There's lots of bogeymen.
I have never
media.
Accused our media of bias. I accuse them of incompetence. Consistently.
Well, never blame...
Never attribute to malice what is best explained
by
incompetence.
Much.
Exactly, yeah.
Absolutely. And the thing is, so don't take everything at face value. It's important to be critical beyond what is just at face value and ask questions that, you know, will give you the
You see, the incongruity that comes in terms of the discourse that we have around China. Right now, everyone is incredibly pissed off at Trump because of the fact that we have this trade war going on.
Mm-hmm.
But no one actually translates the fact that the reason why Chinese are able to produce goods far more cheaply than anywhere else in the world is because they have the absence of basic rights that we take for granted in our country.
A slave economy.
Fundamentally, yeah. We have, you know, the ability to unionize, mm-hmm. and we have things like the CCMA, which actually are very useful at the level of preventing real exploitation happening in the workplace.
Plus, we have free market competition.
Yes, we do.
So if you
and
produce
all
a better product
things,
than me and you
yes.
can produce it cheaper, then you sell more and you go into success and I go into failure.
But if you have a situation like you have in China where they are able to essentially drive down businesses in every other part of the world simply because of the fact that they pay, as I said in the past, you know, they pay $2 a day, we pay $2 an hour. Who's going to win in the long term? How on earth are our industries expected to be competitive?
And but of course, if those people complain about it, they get driven over by tanks in Tiananmen Square. So,
well, it's been a while since they did that. They're a bit more subtle now. Now they
wow.
Now they kidnap you and you are never seen again.
You're put into some part of the wall.
Yes, you know, repression has taken on a new sophistication.
So there's a big change in the way that the Chinese Communist Party behaves now as opposed to the way that it behaved under the former premier, because they're well, maybe it was even two premiers ago, but they always used to say, we're basically living in a bubble, we don't let you know what our plan is, we're quietly going to go about our own business and grow China internally. This premier, Xi, seems to be very interested in expanding, and you could see it happening here in Africa, the influence of China in the rest of the world. They've got this great Silk Road that they're planning now, where they're actually offering money and infrastructure not only to African countries now, but also to Asian ones to rebuild the road into Europe for their own trade purposes, and also so that they can spread Chinese influence politically and socially into parts of the world where they feel that they need to be the big player. The strong man.
The particular idea of uniting the East and West through rail actually goes back to the time of the First World War. You know, we all think that the First World War was triggered by the assassination of the Archduke
Franz Ferdinand.
Yes, but in fact, what happened was that that's when the world struggle for oil was actually coming to the fore, and the Germans were about to complete the railroad that was actually heading down to Baghdad, and everything else kind of flowed from that point. So, look, the whole idea of, and let's go back to what you guys were talking about earlier about the trade route from in the Arctic Circle, which is actually already active. The Russians have been using it quite effectively. So yeah. So you end up now leaving Vladivostok and you sail across the north and you pop down. And yes, obviously a rise in temperature helps that. But guess what? That actually used to be the case. Because, I mean, we've had periods in history where the temperatures were significantly hotter than they were right now. So we had periods in history where vineyards used to flourish in Scotland, as an example. Can we have perspective around that?
Well, this is interesting because I didn't know whether we would go here today or not, but this Amazon story, which has been all over the internet for the last week and a half, 2 weeks, and suddenly everyone who has a heart is busy pouring it out for the poor old Amazon that they didn't really care about 3 weeks ago. And it's been found that much of what the celebrities in particular have been tweeting and Facebooking and WhatsApping to each other about, oh my God, these are the worst levels of forest fire ever in the Amazon's history. Most of it is absolute nonsense. It's been debunked properly by NASA, inter alia, the Brazilian authorities themselves, and by all the people who've been asked to provide proper research that goes back some 20 years in terms of what's happening in the Amazon. So it turns out that there isn't some massive crisis on suddenly. It's no worse necessarily than it was in any other previous year. In fact, it has been worse.
Yes, except Bolsonaro's a fascist, so we've got to start shouting against him.
So, in other words, this is also a manufactured crisis.
It is a manufactured crisis, because if you look in terms of what's happening in Bolivia right now, it's actually far worse than what's happening
in Brazil. And they don't even have the capacity to fight these fires. I mean, what I've been seeing coming through on the international media is people with like 2-liter Coke bottles trying to put out fires. It's crazy what's happening in Bolivia.
Well, whenever we have when we have those runway fires in the United States, it's actually impossible to put them out. Because once they actually start and the temperatures are just so high that, you know, there's no...
Well, you see it in California, right?
Yes, exactly, all the time. And whenever we used to have the situation in the past where the Cape used to burn that way because...
Still doesn't some places.
Now it doesn't anymore because we've actually gone through extermination of alien vegetation.
Yeah.
And fundamentally, it was the pines that used to do that. But guess what? Here's a very interesting theory that I'd like to toss in your direction, which was actually not my theory, but I had a very intense discussion with someone who's been researching this stuff for quite a while. And his theory is that the rains are never going to come back to Cape Town. And the reason why the rains were there in the first place was because of the alien vegetation. And I said, no, get out of here. That alien vegetation sucks up water and it pumps it up into the atmosphere. Whereas right now, at least the rivers are flowing again. You know, you can now see the Lees Peak River has water in it. He says, yes, and it flows straight into the Black Sea, doesn't it? What used to happen is that the pines used to suck it up, turn it into clouds, and it used to come down as rain. But we've gone through this process of saying alien vegetation is bad, whereas in fact what we had done...
Unintended
consequences. Cape Town had actually been terraformed by colonialism, and it was the introduction of this that created that climatic system that existed for so many years until people started ripping up that vegetation. Well, it's an interesting theory.
It's an interesting theory.
Wow.
Mind blown.
Yeah, yes. that is quite something. I mean, it would make sense. Look at how Johannesburg has become a mini climate zone of its own because of all the vegetation here, and that's just because of the gardens in the northern suburb.
Yes, but again, that's changing as well because, you know, all of Witkoppen Road used to be lined with pine trees up until just 15 years ago. Mm. I don't know if you guys remember that. So basically right now where the Cell C headquarters is used to be a pine forest.
That's right.
And all of those have now been ripped out. And we see the effect of that in terms of the dust that now gets blown across the city because those trees used to act as a natural windbreak. So, and also, they used to act as an air conditioning system. So they would suck up water from the ground and then it would come down as rain in the evening. And, yeah, we're seeing the effects of those things.
Well, hasn't rained in Joburg for 4 or 5 months.
It's been winter.
I know, but still it's worth noting that sometimes it used to rain in winter. I mean, I'm not saying that this is some indication. And this is the point with climate and with all of this discussion around climate. You have to have the extremely long view, because if you take a year in isolation, it means absolutely nothing. We have to be very careful about this. I get criticized by people who say that I'm a climate change denier, and I'm certainly not. There is no doubt that human beings, just by virtue of the examples that you've mentioned now, the way we've changed vegetation, for example, that we have an enormous impact on climate.
Well, if you go back very specifically to the Amazon story, suddenly all of us are assuming that we actually have ownership over the Amazon forests. Let's be very clear that all of those tracts of agricultural land in the United States were once actually thriving forests. Yes. And they first went about by exterminating all of the wildlife. So the buffalo were exterminated, and all of the predators that were there were exterminated. And we are now saying, well, actually, yes, you know, we built these massive agricultural traps in the other parts of the world. But now suddenly, because we're dependent on your oxygen, you don't have the right to do anything about it. No, actually, that's rubbish. What we should do is exactly what Ethiopia has done. Go out one day and plant 350 million trees. And yes, we'll see results only in 20 years, but let's start.
Somebody's got to start by planting the trees.
Yeah, good for Ethiopia, by the way. I think everybody agrees on that front.
Speaking of long views, guys, are we going to talk about this Japan-Africa trade?
Well, tell us what you know.
Besides the fact that our favorite President Cupcake is tweeting, broadcasting live from there.
Isn't he at the G7?
No, he's now left the G7.
Oh, he's moved on. He's in Japan now.
He's in Japan now.
Actually, at the G7 where he was an unidentified leader.
That's a nice... I love how everybody was all upset about that.
They're so outraged, yeah.
These are the same people who don't like him, who are complaining that he isn't identified as a leader. They take it as a personal insult that our president, who's really just presided over absolute failure...
Well, I'm insulted that they called him a leader.
I know.
Manufactured outrage. Manufactured outrage, my friends.
This morning is fun. I'm having so much fun. So what's going on in Japan? Let's be serious.
I'm extremely irritated. So this is the seventh one of these Japan-Africa trade exchanges that they're having, talking about the long view. Does anybody know what they discussed at the first one and if they've achieved any of those?
No,
I don't.
No idea.
No, exactly. Like these. I
drive
just
a Subaru. Does that count?
Maybe. But the outrage for me around this thing is all of these African leaders who are going to go and have like tete-a-tetes, as they say, like the presidency put out a couple of days ago, all the way in Japan.
For what?
Like, exactly. Why is the Nigerian president and the South African president unable to have a conversation on the continent? Why do they need Japan to facilitate
or
this for
even
us?
On the phone. How about that? How about on the phone? You know, Trump didn't want to go to the G7. He left it to the last minute and eventually pitched up there because he said it's a waste of time. Maybe he has a point. What did they all do?
Besides the tiff between Bolsonaro and...
Well, the thing that I thought was really cool about the G7 summit was when Macron suddenly invited the Iranians without telling Trump. And I thought that was absolutely brilliant. That is stunning. You know, so it's the first time I've actually had respect for Macron, because seriously, the cuck that's happening right now in the Middle East is all because Trump unilaterally pulled out of a deal that had been painstakingly negotiated by the world powers. Just unilaterally, just simply because of the fact that he wants to create a better market for the Saudis. And the Europeans are doing their damnedest to actually salvage that deal, because I don't think any of us actually want Iran to end up with a nuclear weapon.
Or in open war against Saudi Arabia, which is the first reason.
Oh, I don't know. You know, I've always had had this thing that all of these, I'm trying to come up with an appropriate theocracies, as they are. You know, we should actually lock them all up together, isolate them for 1,000 years, let them literally kill each other, and then let them out into the real world once they've learned to speak nicely to each other.
Well, yes, except that if they have nuclear weapons, it does have an impact.
Exactly,
on all of us.
Which is why I have no interest whatsoever in them actually acquiring any nuclear capability.
Well, listen to this.
Iran has a chance to really build themselves up and be a very great nation, greater than before. But they have to stop terrorism. That is your number one nation of terror. Now, not in the last year and a half, 2 years, because they can't spend like they used to spend. They took President Obama's $150 billion and they doled it out to terrorists all over the place. And I think they're going to change. I really do. I believe they have a chance to be.
Isn't it wonderful? Isn't it absolutely wonderful?
Let me just put a couple of things. Firstly, it wasn't President Obama's $150 billion. It was their money. It was the Iranian assets that were frozen in the United States. And as part of the deal, Obama just basically gave them back their money.
Yeah.
It was never the U.S. money to start off with. And the second thing is that in terms of Iran being a terrorist state, up until the 50s, Iran used to be a thriving secular democracy.
Yeah, it did.
And successive governments were toppled by the CIA, which increasingly led to the situation where you now have this absurd theocracy.
Unintended consequences. I think that's probably going to be the name of the podcast this morning.
The Burning Platform,
the Unintended Consequences Edition.
The most magnificent thing about Donald Trump, which again is... why you have
this
to be
is, this is a line so, I didn't expect to hear from any of us this morning. Go on.
Which is why you have to be so vigilant about what it is that you're ingesting and taking as reality when you see it out in the media. Is the man just says whatever he wants. He just, with no backing of anything, even the government is like left scrambling. So the Department of Foreign Affairs in America is just left scrambling because he walks away from it going, oh, yeah, that
They're
was wonderful.
The most terrible nation in the world.
That was wonderful. Yeah. He walks away from it, you know, takes his wife's hand and walks on. And meanwhile, there's like flames behind him. and then he tweets, you know, it's all fine, guys. It's all fine. We're doing great with China. All these things that people are saying, we're doing great. China's learning. They're learning from this experience, you know. Next week, he's got something completely different that he's tweeting.
You see, the other thing that, other interesting thing that Macron said, and he said that it was actually wrong for Europe to be pushing Russia away because Russia would effectively have been a bulwark against Chinese expansionism. And fundamentally, what they need to be doing is wooing Russia back on side, and which is exactly right as well.
Yeah, that is a good point. Mm. Because really, not just in terms of ideology, but in terms of existential threat, China is probably the most dangerous thing to free democracies.
Absolutely.
In the world, right?
Yes.
I mean, we can talk about the country and all of the things that it's done and its magnificent achievements and its huge productivity and all of that stuff, but you must not for a minute forget what you're dealing with here.
Yes, and I think that unfortunately, though, that ship has already sailed, because I think right now, remember we said this with the regard to the collapse of BRICS.
Yes,
where I said Brazil and South Africa don't really matter.
Yeah,
it's RIC that matters: Russia, India, China, and they are forging ahead. Those three have actually managed to, in spite of the fact that you've had historical clashes between all of those, but they've actually now been kind of, you know, mending those fences.
I just want to play you a clip that really for me is going to be one of those clips that they'll play in 10 years time and laugh about, like the ones where Reagan was doing those Soviet jokes all those years ago. This is Trump as he's about to board a flight and he's talking about China and the trade tariffs that he's put in place, and he refers to himself as the chosen one. And clearly what he's doing here is trolling the hell out of the media, but they're the only ones who don't get the joke. So listen to it again, and if you haven't seen the clip, you need to see, because at the moment he says, I am the chosen one. He looks up like as if to God, and he's taking the piss. No one on earth could possibly imagine that this is a serious thing. But listen to it anyway and hear how he deals with it. So a master of media manipulation, if nothing else.
That, and I'm not doing it. Somebody said it's Trump's trade war. This isn't my trade war. This is a trade war that should have taken place a long time ago by a lot of other presidents. Over the last 5 or 6 years, China's made $500 billion. $500 billion. Ripped it out of the United States. And not only that, if you take a look, intellectual property theft, add that to it and add a lot of other things to it. So somebody had to do it. I am the chosen one. Somebody had to do it. So I'm taking on China. I'm taking on China on trade.
I am the chosen one, he says, and I'm taking on China. But actually, he is. I mean, remember, let's just cast our eyes back a little bit because there needs to be some historicity here. China was...
Wait, what is that word again? Historicity.
China was brought in. China was brought into the world of the family of nations by Nixon. Nixon opened up China because China was completely insulated and insular and was not interested in dealing with the rest of the world, especially in the wake of World War II and everything else that had happened to them. Nixon went over there and opened up China. The reason he did that was because he needed a bulwark against the Soviet Union, which was then the other most powerful nation in the world, and the Cold War was still very much underway. And Nixon went to China to put Mao up against what was going on in, you know, Brezhnev and Khrushchev and the rest of them's time. So this became a reason for China to start entering the family of nations. And they came in, and they've been mostly a quiet player for a very long time. And suddenly, with the ascendancy of their economy and their enormous ability to mobilize people with central planning and control and huge amounts of discipline in society, they've now become the monster that the Soviet Union failed to become. And I mean, this is why someone has to, if the US is going to be the superpower it wants to be going forward, China is its biggest threat.
Well, I think China is a threat to all of us who actually value classic liberal values like free speech and freedom of movement and property rights and all of those things. Because in China, all of those things exist only at the point at which the state decides what that percentage you are going to be allowed. And yes, that's why to China, actually. Yeah, exactly like you, I marvel at all of the technological stuff that the Chinese do on an ongoing basis.
Absolutely.
But the greatest success that the Chinese have had is that they've managed to control the Hollywood narrative. And ask yourself to what extent the Chinese actually own large percentages
of all the studios.
Of all the studios, and which then sets the agenda in terms of. You've watched The Martian, haven't you?
Yes.
Yeah. Fabulous movie.
Matt Damon living on a horrible planet.
Yes. Yeah. But if there's any power on Earth that would have actually been able to assist the Americans, it would have been Russia. But you cannot have a situation in terms of the storytelling where the Russians are suddenly coming to the rescue of the Americans. So it had to be the Chinese.
Suddenly that movie is not just a movie. It's propaganda.
This is happening all the time.
Nothing ever is. Nothing ever is.
Don't get me all conspiratorial and afraid.
It's not conspiratorial. If I was in China's position, I'd be doing exactly the same thing. You buy soft power. Soft power actually matters.
Soft power can be way better to wield than hard power, because obviously soft power, you don't have to take the blame when it fails.
Yes.
It's influence as opposed to power.
Exactly, yes. No. It's like the SACP.
Yes, who've never taken responsibility for any of the disasters that the ANC has had to take responsibility
for. Exactly, but the bulk of the disasters that we have in our country right now originate within the think tanks of the SACP.
When they still had think tanks.
No, they still have them. And they're still doing exactly
they're
what...
They're still thinking or they're just tanks?
They're still doing exactly what... Jeez.
They're just echo chambers at moment.
They're still doing exactly what they used to do.
But guys, are we going to talk about Tito's paper?
Are we going to talk about Tito's paper? Everyone is focused on the fact that someone used the word non-whites.
What happened? I don't know about this.
Listen, I've just had I didn't raise the question of Tito's paper because I started reading it. I received it a couple of days ago, but I've been busy.
Did you get bored?
No, I'm not bored. You know this stuff. Okay. I tend to read very carefully.
I'll admit something here, and this is my fault, but he sent it to me. The minister sent it to me, and I didn't read it, which is my own fault. It's my birthday week, and forgive me. Politics is not an important part of my diet when I'm actually doing a little bit of introspection. But Tito Mboweni Spring Surprise Growth Plan. This is the paper you're talking about, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, So he I was meant to pay attention.
Well, it's only,
is
it's
there
only
anything that I missed?
It's only a surprise to people who haven't been following the news. I mean, it was promised that this was going to be released ahead of the medium-term expenditure speech.
Did you hear what Edward Kisswetter said this week?
Yes.
Probably much more important. He says that we're on the brink of a tax revolt. He says people are not paying their taxes and don't want to pay their taxes, and you can't raise taxes anymore because people will not be supportive of a government that is clearly wasting and stealing their money.
We've been in a tax revolt for a while.
Yes.
Is that
something to comment on, or can we move on?
No, I think that he's exactly right. But the point is, I mean, the situation where SA Express failed to take off, you know, when people were left stranded. You've been hearing about this. And mm-hmm. SA Express shouldn't be allowed to exist.
Yeah.
You know, the billions upon billions that get pumped in that particular direction, just like SAA. But we still have a government that insists on taking taxpayer money that could actually be spent on providing water supplies to municipalities in the Eastern Cape. But no, you know, we're spending it on keeping these airlines flying, and they continue to be sinkholes. And so you'd have to be utterly stupid to not see that this is the consequence.
Gavin Watson, do we want to comment on him, or you just want to leave that alone?
Oh, guys, yes, Tito's paper needs to be paid attention.
Tito's paper, because I haven't read it.
You see,
he
so desperately needs people to pay attention to him and this paper of his. He's sending it out to
everybody. Don't be nasty. Don't make this about Tito.
Hi, man. But he did get a statement from the DA welcoming his contribution. And they're pleased to see that he's... I was like, how? DA, where's your policy guy? Here you are. You're like, we're thankful that Tito has come to some kind of... And it's, you know, at the moment, he's asking everybody to send him comments. So he's asking for tips for Tito.
Mm-hmm.
When you have read it, please do.
All right, I will.
And okay, we'll come back send to him it. Tips. Gareth,
I'll tell you what.
Did you at least acknowledge his message?
But I didn't read it. So
don't do this to the man. Don't do this to the man, please.
Eh? All right, I'll
give
get
him
back
some
to
attention.
Work.
He's working. He's not tweeting
next
us about
week,
his
next week. I'm not here
paste.
For the burning platform. You'll handle things, I'm sure. But when I get back, then we'll see if it's time for the discussion around Tito and his paper. All right. In the meantime, do we want to discuss Gavin Watson? A lot of people are.
I don't know what to say about Gavin Watson that's not going to drag us down the path of more conspiracy theories.
Well, then, do it anyway.
Why?
Because we've got 5 minutes, and I'd like to hear what you think about this. I mean, there are only four possibilities here, right? The first one is that he was taken out. The second one is that he committed suicide. The third one is that he has skipped the country and he has gone to ground, and this was an elaborate hoax that was created for him to get himself out of the firing line the day before he went to tax court and to the State Capture Commission. And the fourth one is that this was a terrible accident, and if you believe that, then you're really gullible.
Well, the Twitter detectives have got some theories about that.
But let's hear.
As we hear,
usually that's the last place you go for wisdom. But
as Begicele is... said, mm-hmm. they'll be thoroughly investigating all of this and starting out with fingerprinting the body mm-hmm. so that they can give everybody the...
You'd be sure it's Gavin.
Fingerprinting the body. Oh, Mandy Wiener purportedly
has
identified.
A photograph.
Really?
Yeah.
She says she's got a picture of him after the accident. She can confirm that it is Gavin Watson. I mean, Mandy Wiener's got no reason to lie, but maybe her sources gave her, but she wasn't actually at the scene, as I understand it.
Although her sources have generally been credible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She
tends to be well-connected.
After reading that Killing Cable book of hers, Mandy Wiener, side-eyeing her.
Oh, really?
I'm going to believe her.
Oh, you mean believe her?
I'm going to believe her.
I thought you meant side-eyeing her as in you don't trust her.
No. Okay. That is a side-eye that's like, yeah, girl.
Okay. Well, she says
secure your bag.
It was absolutely him. And that we're all, if we think that he's hiding out in Panama or in the Cayman Islands, we're completely wrong.
Look, I guess it's kind of like the Epstein story, isn't it?
You mean the Clintons were involved?
No, I'm saying that the conspiracy theories are going to...
Did Hillary Clinton drive that car?
I don't know. But I think the conspiracy theories are actually going to be among us for years to come.
For a long, long time.
And, you know, I can just basically shrug. Look, far more important, take this view. You know, the leader of the Rwandan opposition was assassinated in Mozambique.
No, I did not.
Well, there you go. Again.
Our ignorance.
Are you just making that up, Catherine? Is this a real
Would
thing?
I do this?
So the Rwandan opposition leader.
Well, a Rwandan opposition leader. Because, you know, I mean, nearly all of the Rwandan opposition have actually fled. You know, so I understand that my good friend Tito, you know, really loves what Kagame is doing in Rwanda and building the country. But the fact is that we have had Rwandan intelligence assassinating people on South African soil. That's happened in the past. And, so this week it was... it's basically a Rwandan opposition leader who's fled in exile to Mozambique, established fairly solid businesses out there. There was a previous attempt on his life a couple of months ago, but he got taken out.
Sure. That's quite scary.
In the streets, yeah.
Well, if there is a silver lining for all of this, I don't know that our government is competent enough to carry out any kind of complicated conspiracy. I think that there are too many moving parts, and we know our government can't do anything like moving parts.
It doesn't need to be the government. It just needs to be one or two individuals.
Even interested parties. I mean, even the ANC is so bad at assassinations that they have to commit these crimes in broad daylight. These are not covered up very well. So I think we will find out what really happened.
Well, in case it ends, we have these assassinations happening all the time. And you know, we take that as the natural order of business.
What happened to Sindiso Magaka? But that's a story for another day.
Oh, yes.
Sure. Well, I think we've had our fill, ladies and gentlemen. I cannot imagine that you would need more of a diet of interesting stuff, conspiratorial stuff, international stuff, local stuff, and even the Canton Pillé version of, or rather the Canton Pillé flavor this morning of smashing the state into oblivion and making it completely... unimportant.
Wait, did I say that?
No, hang on a second. Today's Canton Pillé mind-blowing moment is why there'll never be rain in the Cape again.
There we go. Even that. I don't think
I'm waiting for people to call me a climate change denier.
Look at that smug smile.
It's coming, don't you worry. And then just one quick comment. This is fantastic. This is hilariously funny from Sandile, who says, leave Trump alone. He is the chosen one. All right, Sandile, you get the last word. This is The Burning Platform. It's brought to you by Nando's. I don't think you're going to get this kind of conversation.
Have a great trip.
Anywhere else. Yes, thank you. I will be away for a week.
Be vigilant.
I'll be vigilant, Pumi. I'll look out for those pickpockets. Someone else said earlier this morning, Rome must be very rough if South Africans have to watch themselves. So I couldn't agree more. Thank you, everybody. Have an excellent day. Big thanks to Nando's for being part of The Burning Platform every week. And thank you, of course, to you for joining us. We will see you. I will see you in about a week. Sia will be here to look after you tomorrow with the rest of the team and all of next week. Don't forget, The Burning Platform returns in a week's time with the famous cast and crew of returning champions, Pumi Mashiko and Canton Pillé.
I'm going on a trip to China.
Oh, no, you're not. You're going on a trip to China, but not now. Need you here next week. All right.
This is CliffCentral.com.